I need you to knock some sense into me. I'm sure you can.
Yeah, I don't know.
I enjoy listening to you. I don't always agree with everything.
All right. Enough of this persiflage.
So, you want my question?
I'm certainly not going to get myself in trouble by telling you what to do.
That makes great sense. Gosh, that's good.
Did I overwhelm you with words and wisdom?
I've got 7 kids. I feel like I could call you every day.
What? Wait, you're telling me I'm wrong?
Yes, I am, Dr. Ray.
You just need to tune in to Dr. Ray, honey. He's got all the answers.
Am I right or am I right?
Probably.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
An elite member of Catholic Media's SWAT team, stopping whining and tantrums, raising your IQ with pretty much every segment. But you got to stay tuned over time to keep it there. It tends to fade, especially if you have children. They devalue your IQ. I had 10 of them. I think my IQ went down about 3.7 points per kid. Some of them actually took more away from me. I've recovered somewhat. I have. I've regained about 10 IQ points, but I don't think I'll ever really regain the full complement of my IQ prior to children. Anyway, this is Look Back Friday, a variant of The Doctor Is In. There are several calls up there from previous programs that were taken out and edited. Ooh, there's some really short ones up there. Normally the calls are anywhere between 4 and 5.5 minutes, but there's a couple that are just really, really, really short, which must mean that I have a whole lot I want to say about those calls, and we will get to those. There are themes in therapy that you only gain from experience. You have to do a lot of it. And this is not something that when you take a therapy course in grad school or some kind of course in diagnosis that you pick up on these particular themes, but when you do a lot of therapy, a lot of counseling, you see them become fairly common. A theme that I picked up working with parents is what I call the dust kicker upper. Parents will come to counseling because they're frustrated about a particular child. One or two or three or four of the other children in the family don't cause them this kind of consternation, this kind of frustration, this kind of second guessing, this kind of, exasperation, if you will. He's the main target of their feeling inept as parents. One of the things that happens is if we talk about polishing up, sharpening up, burnishing their discipline skills, after a week or two, they'll come in and they'll offer this insight. They'll say, "We noticed that as his behavior was improving, that our daughter, who we didn't think was much of a problem, is more of a behavior problem than we thought." Now, one might say, well, is that because she's reacting in some way to what's going on, and parents are altering their parenthood, so she's reacting to it? Much of the time, that's not the reason they cite. They say that they had put so much time and effort into this one child who's causing more chaos in the family or more frustration that they didn't notice that one or more of the other children were doing things that they would otherwise have dealt with discipline-wise, but they let go because by comparison, they didn't seem anywhere near as frustrating or ongoing as the dust kicker upper. And I've made the observation that it's kind of like they were hiding in the dust. The child that you came in here for was kicking up so much discipline dust that the other kids more or less weren't noticed. But in fact, they found out that their daughter was a little more disrespectful than they had realized. Because the child that they came in for was argumentative or quick to throw a fit or defiant, the daughter's disrespect was a lower key comparatively. But once the main discipline question, their son or their daughter, began to resolve itself, at least somewhat, they noticed that the other kids were getting away with stuff. Now, are they doing it on purpose, the kids? Who knows? But I think what happened was the parents had only so much discipline in their reservoir. And so the tough kid was getting 84% of their discipline efforts. Or maybe better said, their frustration, because the discipline really with this child wasn't all that consistent or effective because he was just so relentless. And it's easy to develop bad habits when you got a kid who's relentlessly unruly. But the child that was 2 years younger or 4 years older was not seen as any kind of problem whatsoever, because I asked that in the first session. Are you seeing this from the other kids? Oh, no, 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 my daughter doesn't do this. She doesn't act this way. And then two sessions later, we find out, well, she does act that way. We just noticed it now. I've had many parents tell me that. The dust kicker upper. He basically protects the other kids by his misconduct, because they can present more misconduct and it doesn't register on the parents' radar, because his blip is so bright on their radar that their little isn't picked up. And that's not something that anybody would talk about in grad school in a therapy course. Wouldn't come up. Unless somehow, some way, the professor was also an ongoing therapist and she was describing some of the themes that they too have experienced in doing therapy. But that kind of stuff is something you just pick up seeing a lot of people. In this case, a lot of parents with a lot of kids and a lot of dust. Dr. Ray.
Thank you for taking my call. I just never thought I would call your show, but here I am.
I joined a group. I've struggled with this a lot of my life. Procrastinators Anonymous. I joined it last year. We haven't met yet, but I'm still waiting. My mom used to accuse me of that. She said, "Ray, you will never amount to anything because you procrastinate." I said, "Oh yeah, you just wait, just wait." Because this is Look Back Friday. Let's take our first call. Is from Zulaka, which is an interesting name. Don't know what it means. It's spelled Z-U-L-A-K-A, Zulaka. This is a child who apparently does not know that they are an adopted child.
So I'm 50 years old, and I'm married, and I have two grown children. And at work, I met a lady who is 80 years old, a client of mine, and over the course of some time, I began to learn her situation, that she had an adopted child who was at the time only 4 years old. And she had a lady that was going to take over for her and her husband whenever they got too old to care for her, because my client is now in her 80s and the girl is now 9 years old.
How did your client get this child to adopt at age four?
She fostered her mom. And I think the girl was very irresponsible, maybe got into drugs is what I kind of hear. And she took her from her and has had her, had possession of her since she was 2 weeks old.
Oh.
Now her and her husband have been raising her, but, you know, her health is not so great. She's a little bit immobile and, you know, they're the difficulties of aging. And so the issue that I'm having is that she cut ties with the person that was supposed to take care of her, because I'm not exactly sure what the details are, but a couple of years later she asked me if I would take her. So she was going to not a very good school, and you know, so we decided that she would go ahead and transition.
You did adopt this child? Zuleika, you did adopt?
No, I have a guardianship. I have guardianship of her on a year-by-year basis. You know, her parents are still living, and they don't really want to give her up 100%. So the situation is that I have her from Monday through Friday. I take her to school. I feed her. I help her with homework, all the things. She does call us mom and dad. And then on the weekend, she's with her elderly parents.
I want to make sure I understand. Elderly parents, meaning this 80-year-old client of yours?
Yes, they're her adoptive parents. They are,
okay, so,
you know, her parents.
I mean, I got to make sure I got this right. The 80-year-old client fostered the mom of this child. When this child was born, they kind of took over and raised this child up to age four. Well, they were going
to age eight, yes.
Oh, okay. So they were going to place the child with someone, but that fell through. And now you are the guardian for this 9-year-old child.
Yes.
Got it.
And she's been with me since the beginning of the year. First part of the year was on the weekends only. And then when school started and we saw that she was in need of a better school district and everything, she's with me during the week and then goes with them and on the weekends. Mm-hmm. So there's so many issues with this because, first of all, they don't really discipline her because they're not 100% capable of doing that. There's a lot of yelling. They call her name and it's like, where are you? What are you doing? You know, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And she gets bored because they don't do a whole lot of activities on the weekend, you know, when she's a very active
child. No flag football? They don't play flag football?
Yeah. No, they don't do a whole lot of things. So we're trying to undo a lot of the things that they do on the weekend, or the things that she can get away with on the weekend, you know, trying to undo them during the week.
Why have they not turned over custody to you?
I'm not 100% sure. I suspect, if I had to say, is first of all, they love her. They do. They very much love her, and they don't want to let her go because I think they still feel that they can still do something for her. The other part of it could be financial, because I believe that they would have to. Oh, this is the other thing. She gets VA benefits. So there's some medical things that she gets coverage for. I guess she'll get her college paid for, those kind of things. If I adopt her, then I would not. She would lose some of those things. And that's what I was told. On top
so
of
your,
medical,
your question
you know.
Regarding this young lady, obviously she knows the situation. She knows that she goes there, and then during the week she's raised by you, right? So is she confused?
She doesn't know that she's adopted, first of all. She thinks that these are her natural parents.
Oh.
She says that in the Bible, people used to have children when they were very old. So that's what they tell her.
Ooh.
So she doesn't know that she's adopted.
Oh, okay. Oh, boy. Well, I would think you can't say a whole lot because you're a guardian and their custodial parents may not agree with what she's doing, what they're doing. And ultimately, I think this may basically come to you as the complete custodial parent at some point, either through their illness or their fragility or something. But at this point, probably you're going to have to proceed as, you come with us because we can take better care of you. We're younger. We love you very much. We see you as our daughter. And they love you too. So on the weekends, you visit with them. I mean, that so far sounds like she's adjusted to that, hasn't she?
She has. She's really, you know, she cares for us. I can see that, and we care for her and all those things. But, you know, we deal with a lot of the things that we're having to correct during the week that they don't do on the weekend. So some of those, we do have some discipline problems that we're dealing with.
There's a parallel here to parents who have visitation on the weekends or perhaps Wednesday also, and they are permissive Disney parent weekend because they only have the child part-time and they certainly don't want to constrict what the child might want to do. Or maybe they just by nature are lax or permissive, so that when the child goes back to the main parent, the one who has custody probably 70% of the time, it's got a lot of undoing that has to be done. Many parents will say to me, it took me 3 or 4 days just to kind of get them back under control again after they've had Disney weekend and they got to do anything they want, ate anything they want, watched 9 hours of video games and whatever kind of TV was on. That is a problem. That is a serious problem. It happens much, and it's one of the risks in wanting out of a marriage that you say is discontented, I'm unhappy in it, I don't like it, it's unpleasant, and that is something that you could have to deal with. And I always tell parents who say, I want out, there's no necessary pathology that is pushing me out, I just want out, not happy, we don't seem to get along anymore, therefore I'm going to feel a whole lot better about life if I'm not with this person. And I ask, are you prepared to give up a percentage of your control over this child and how this child is raised, and especially if these are younger kids? You can't do anything about the kinds of freedoms that they have in that other home, unless it's a serious case of neglect, and then you go back to court. But short of that, permissive parenting, cultural parenting, is not anything that would affect their visitation or their 50-50 custody. So that's something to consider. But that's tangential to this. I think the reason I pulled this one aside, this is a much more complicated type of adoptive relationship. And I initially had sensed that there must be some financial gain involved. And I'm not saying that that's their main motive, but that something is involved financially so that they have to remain the adoptive parents, even though they cannot, because of their age, raise this child 24/7. Now, all that said, there was a streak of series, maybe even a few movies, about adopted children when they are old enough, seeking out birth parents. And the implication was, this is always a beautiful reunion. Two people getting back together after those many, many years. Birth mom always wondering. Birth child starting to feel a little more of a hole, quote unquote, in their heart, not knowing their full roots, affecting their identity, etc. I mean, that was always kind of the psychological themes of a lot of these. And the implication was, and I asked parents, I've spoken to a lot of adopted parent groups, and I asked them, I said, if you just based all this on media or movies or pop articles, what percentage of adopted children would you think would seek out birth parents when they are able and old enough? And the numbers vary between 50 and 90%. The actual figure is more like 10%. Now, there's a lot of reasons for this. A lot of reasons. Some are practical, that it's not always a situation where the birth mom wants a reunion. She has moved on with her life, and at the time of the birth of the child, there was just absolutely no way she could be a responsible parent. There wasn't a male in the home at all either, so she just thought it would be so much better for this child to be placed in a family with a mom and a dad and loving stability, which she didn't have. That's some of it. Some of it is, and this is more and more the case now, a higher percentage of children are taken
from the birth parent because of irresponsibility, neglect, or abuse, or drug use, or jail time. So they are removed from the birth home and placed in a foster care setting where they are ultimately adopted, either by the foster parents, which happened in this situation, or by someone else. So in that sense, the child's beginnings were chaotic and turbulent. Now, unless the birth parent pulled their lives together, there would still be that. And unfortunately, that is commonly the case, that the birth parent has sadly continued a downward trajectory in their lives. Another one, which I think is very prominent, is that the child sees the adoptive parents as my parents. These are the parents who love me, and I love them, and this is my home. I can share with you some of my own kids' approach to all this. Three of my children sought out birth parents when they were old enough. Well, in essence, their birth parents sought them. Two of them have no contact with their birth parents whatsoever anymore. That situation was still very, very chaotic, and the kids just said, boy, I want no part of living in that world. One has a kind of a real struggle to get along with her birth mother. Birth mother is, for her, difficult, and she just simply more or less says the more distance, the better. Several of my children approach it as they don't even think about any kind of searching out a birth parent because they view it as, you're my mom and dad. You've always been my mom and dad, and I can't imagine anything else. My son came to me one time when he was about 15, and he said to me and his mother, he said, I can't even think about if there was a family somewhere else for me. It just doesn't make any sense. Here's my family. So my kids kind of reflect a lot of the seeking out birth parent situations. Not that there isn't those kinds of reunions that are warm and loving and grateful, and I'm sure people could call here and tell me about them. They, by and large, are not necessarily the norm.
I like that. I can do that. So. That's doable.
Thank you for joining me here on The Doctor Is In. I'm Dr. Ray Garrity, Monday through Friday, 1 o'clock Eastern Time. This is Look Back Friday. Previous callers, edited at the capable hands of my producer man, Andrew Krucek. Set them back up, listen to them again, and it's always uncomfortable for me to listen to my taking of calls. I generally don't get the feeling, oh boy, I felt pretty good about the way I handled that. More often than not, my feeling is, huh, well, I suppose I could have said that, but maybe could have gone off in a different direction on that one. So, for your sake, I go through the self-scrutiny of those earlier calls so I can comment more on them so that in the future, if I ever do a look back on a look back, I can have the same kind of disconcerting self-scrutiny. Anonymous female from Pennsylvania called. Her 22-year-old son is experiencing some social anxiety. This social anxiety, how's it manifesting himself? Is he not looking for a job? Is he not applying to college anymore? What's he doing?
Yeah, both. The first phase of this getting, like, I say we have three phases. When he kind of hit somewhere around 15 and he had been playing like 8 seasons, we're talking fall and spring, of soccer, and all of a sudden through middle school he was great, he loved it, and then he really felt judged by every player on the next season's team when he hit around 15 years old, and he's like, I don't want to do it anymore. And it coincided that year with really struggling with the classroom setting, but he made it through eighth grade. And then we tried homeschool in ninth grade, and he did okay, but then we're talking, this is like 5 or 6 years ago, and then another phase when he was, we went back to a classical school he had been in, and he went to school for 2 days on 11th grade, and then he didn't want to go to school on the third day, and he literally curled up in a ball and wouldn't get out of bed. I can't. I don't want to be around these people. I'm afraid of what they think of me.
That's a standard.
Yeah.
That's a standard, the judgmental thing. You know, they're going to be thinking about me. They're going to be thinking bad things about me, and I can't stand that they're going to be thinking about bad things about me. So he's paralyzing himself.
It crippled his ability to finish school in a normal way, and he ended up withdrawing, and we ended up trying homeschool again for a balance of 11th and 12th grade, and then he just decided, I'm going to get my GED, and he did. It took a while, but then he, with this really hodgepodge curriculum vitae for a resume to apply to colleges, he did try to apply in the past year to a small Catholic college, and he didn't get accepted, and it really crippled him again. And he was doing so well for about a year with that goal in mind of applying to that special
Mom,
school.
Mom, I'm going to have to invite you to call back because I know I let you give me some details on all of this. It's a history of social anxiety. Maybe his temperament is wired that way. I'm going to strongly suggest that he get with a therapist who practices cognitive behavioral therapy, which is very successful with social anxiety and all of the ways that he's telling himself it's very fearful out there that these people think this, and that's just simply intolerable. That is classic social anxiety. The main driver is I'm being judged, and the judgments are bad, and that's intolerable. I can't gauge what someone else is thinking, but I'm suspecting they're critical of me. They are somehow putting me down. Now, that is created in the head. It may or may not be happening, and most of the time it's not. The second part of that is, what is it that is making the individual so fearful of someone's opinion? That's why it's very helpful to go to someone who is good at practicing cognitive behavioral therapy to take a look at what you're telling yourself about these social situations and how you must avoid them. You have to stay away from them because they all have the common denominator of these people are judging me and they are thinking less of me. And pretty soon, as you saw what happened here with this young man, it starts to spread. Anxiety has a tendency to do that. The shrinks call it generalizing. It expands into other situations. Initially, he was so uneasy around his soccer team that he quit soccer. But then it moved into other settings, school, potentially a job, trying new activities. If that young man came into my office, the first thing I would start to work on is, what is it about other people's opinions of him? Assuming they have them, that's the other thing we've got to explore, is what makes him so convinced that they're even paying attention to him? But what is it about their opinions that it's so intolerable if someone would think you stink at soccer? What makes that so unbearable? What are you telling yourself? The other thing that's happening is there's a hypersensitivity to, these people are scrutinizing me. Whether it's a party, whether it's some kind of activity, a sports team, whether it's school. He wouldn't raise his hand. Of course he wouldn't raise his hand because he'd be so fearful of somebody thinking what he asked or said is just dumb. And it's paralyzing. Social anxiety is pretty common. It's much more common than you think. And most people just avoid certain social situations. I have friends who won't go to funerals. So I don't want to go there. They feel ill at ease. Or people who will not... public speaking is a social anxiety, is what it is. And it's the number one fear. And some studies put it at 75% of people just dread public speaking. Well, that's social. Because what are people going to think of me while I am up there giving a talk, giving an announcement, giving a speech? I know there are a lot of people that would love to be lectors at Mass, to read Scripture. But there's no way. There's absolutely no way they wouldn't. Why? Because they're so afraid of what other people might think. What if they stumble upon a word? What if they don't pronounce some of those biblical words correctly? Yeah, there's a lot more to be said about social anxiety, but it really comes down to, one, people are going to judge me. Two, their judgments are going to be bad. And three, I can't take that. Andrew, thank you for joining me here on The Doctor Is In. This is Look Back Friday, a variant. Pretty much most of our Fridays are taken up with Look Back Friday, but every so often we will come in and have an in-person Friday where we take your calls. But today is not one of those days. Today is looking at previous calls, and then I get to talk more about them. That's really what it boils down to. Pretty straightforward. Let's go to, let me look at that clock and see, gauge what I've got here. Yeah, let's go from Trisha in Georgia. She's struggling to let go of her past.
Something came on my phone. I don't always look at stuff, but this says how to have more joy in your 70s, which I qualify. I'm 75. So what I want to know, it said, the one that caught my the most said, do away with the past. Don't think about it. Just, you know, go on from here. And I thought, how do you do that? I think most of us by 75 have had some really troubling things happen in our lives. So I'm just wondering.
First question, Tricia. Is the troubling past mostly concerned with other humans?
Yes.
Okay. We got to narrow it down here. That's what most people say. The grievances, the hurts, the betrayals, yeah, the offenses, the nastiness, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. How do you let go of that, right?
Right.
Well?
Well, I will say that several of the things that happened is because I became Catholic 4 years ago. So I've had a lot of losses because of that, including my husband of 45 years.
Wow.
I know, right?
You gave up a lot. Well, you say you lost your husband. I don't want to take you away from your call, but did he leave you?
He left me. He told me he would if I became Catholic. But, you know, wow. I came into the Catholic faith totally as a miracle, listening to a show I won't mention. It could have been yours. Didn't matter. God used it to say, this is the truth. Mary's your mother. Do you remember the Bible verse you took? By then it was 7 years ago. Do whatever he tells you. This is what I'm telling you. So, I mean, I had to. I had no choice.
Well, Trish, I'm just going to make a speculation here. Trish, I'm going to make a speculation. My guess would be that you didn't have the most solid marriage all along, and he may have been looking for some reason.
That is possible. He did get married pretty quickly afterwards.
Yeah. And he may have had her in his life
for a while. Somebody we had known in college, and I don't know how he knew where she was.
Yeah, he may have known her for a while. Yeah, and he can put the blame on you. He can say, I'm not leaving. You're the one who's changed.
Yeah.
So don't beat yourself up about that. Okay, so let's get back to your question. How do you let go of the past? Most people think that the stuff that happened to them at the hands of other people is just there. It's going to happen. You got to push it away. Not really. You're keeping it alive by thinking about it.
Right.
You know that. That's what keeps it alive. It's not the fact that it's going to be alive on its own. It's the past.
Right.
But if you dwell on the fact that, oh, I can't believe she did that. I mean, I've never treated her that way. You know, that hurt me so bad that she would act like that. Especially when you got to rehearse this. And as long as you rehearse it, you're going to keep it alive. So when you catch yourself rehearsing, you say to yourself, stop it. Stop it. I'm not going to think about the fact that she said that 18 times. That's how you let go of the past. You don't dwell on it. You got to keep it alive, Trish.
Okay. I see what you're saying. So
sure.
The moment I think of it, I'm like, nope, not going there.
Not going there.
I'm Catholic.
Yeah, not going there. And you know, our Lord said, they persecuted me, they're going to persecute you. Blessed are you when they revile you and utter all kinds of slander against you for my name's sake. Rejoice and be glad. That's a tough one to take, but it sounds like you're experiencing that directly.
Yes, I also had to give up. We had a daughter with severe autism, and I couldn't take care of her by myself. So,
wow.
But she, God had a plan. She is in a wonderful host home family that loves her in Savannah, and I hear she's doing great.
That's wonderful to hear, Trish. God bless you for your strength, my dear. God bless you for your strength. One of the mindsets that replays itself over injuries in the past usually hurts, betrayals, things that people do or say that you didn't expect, or just were part of events. One of the mindsets is that shouldn't have happened. Whenever you say that shouldn't have happened, the question becomes why? Why shouldn't it have happened? That person, I thought they were my friend. I can't believe a friend would act like that. Well, you're saying that they shouldn't have acted like that if they were a friend, but they did act like that. And part of getting over the past is accepting the past. Yeah. There's a lot of stuff back there. If you totaled it all up, and it's a good thing our memories aren't the greatest, because we could have plenty of fodder just to simply rehearse in our minds over and over and over again. Relive it. Rethink it. Retalk to it to ourselves about, do you believe they did that? She could look at her husband of 45 years who said, you're going to be Catholic, I'm not hanging around. Now, I'm pretty certain, I'm just predicting on base rates here, that was his out. That was not his reason. That was his justification for saying, finally. Okay, this has been building up for a long time anyway. I want to go. Because if they had a solid marriage, he probably would have at least hung around to see what this Catholic thing would have done. Maybe it would have made her a nicer wife, more charitable, more giving. He could have been the recipient of all that spiritual largesse. But he didn't. He took off, flat out. Now, she can look at that and she said, I gave him 45 years. I persevered with him. There was a lot about him that a lot of people wouldn't have tolerated, but I did. I did it for our kids' sake. I did it for my commitment. I did it for looking at him and his weaknesses and saying, okay, well, what can I do to persevere? And then he turns around and does that. Should he have done that? Of course not. No, any sense of fair play. But he did. See, that's the thing about letting go of the past. It did. It happened. Whether it should have, whether it was a disappointment, whether it was a betrayal, whether it was unexpected, whatever it was, it happened. And to say it shouldn't have happened is basically saying, well, reality shouldn't have happened. I should have control over the way that person behaves. In one of my books, it's called Living Calm, Mastering Anger and Frustration. There's a chapter called Rehearse or Reverse. And I talk about the power of mental rehearsal. How long are you going to go over this? How long are you going to analyze it from every angle? With all the what ifs. And all of the ways you could have responded and you didn't respond. All the things you should have done different. I'll draw the parallel to one of the more common questions we get here on this radio program, which is the adult kid who's left the faith. And parents agonize. And part of their agony is they overthink, what could we have done differently? Maybe we shouldn't have done this. Maybe we would have done more of this. Maybe I didn't see this. Maybe I should have been more sensitive to this. You can second guess every move you make because you're not God and you can't know the perfect solution. And by the way, God is perfect, but even if he would give us the perfect solution, it doesn't mean we're going to take it, and he doesn't force it upon us, and you can't force your solution on anybody either, including your adult kids. So reliving the past is essentially saying, I can't let it go. And I can't let it go because I should have known better. Or they shouldn't have done that. Just remember, they did. And you couldn't have known better. So, we dwell. And dwelling keeps it alive. Dwelling pours guilt on the wound. Dwelling keeps unforgiveness alive. Let's take a break. Jump on this real quick. I've only got about 5 minutes, so let's go to Kathleen. She's asking about more particularly survival camps for teens. Is this somebody you know?
Yes, my granddaughter, adopted at 9 years old from foster care. Mother and grandmother both had some mental illness. Mother used drugs, grandmother used drugs. This girl, though, is very, very smart. She's very attractive, and she does everything she can to ruin relationships, and she's been in a care facility for about a year because it was getting too much to be in the home. She was using marijuana at lunch, school, and alcohol, and sneaking out at 2 a.m. And she was capable of getting straight A's and would. She went in a cheer camp and she excelled, but she can be cruel in the way she speaks to people, so she has a hard time keeping girlfriends, and I don't think she even wants to in a way. She does, but she's just, been through the ropes, and now the organization where she is, she stole something at the nearby high school she was had the privilege of going to. She could be educated at this
place. Well, you know what, honey? I'm going to have to hurry you real quick because I only got about a minute and a half.
Okay, I'll stop.
So what particularly are you asking?
Is it a wise thing to do with a child who's already lost one mother, and then another foster mother kicked her out, and my daughter and her husband took her in, and is it wise to do that to a child or not?
Well, it's going to come down to practicalities.
16.
It's going to come down to practicalities because they've already shown they can't handle her, and that's not their fault.
Yeah.
She just may be too tough.
Right.
And when you got the drug and alcohol exposure and this vicious history that she's had, doesn't surprise me at all that she's extremely difficult to socialize. I had no problems understanding that at all. So she's had a number of inpatient kind of settings. This would just sort of be another, a concentrated intervention. Probably the best thing it would do is buy some time, and it may have an impact, and it may allow her to mature and grow up a little bit. But if you're asking me to speculate whether she's going to get better because of this and straighten out, I wouldn't be real confident about that.
Okay.
Now, if you're saying, would that ruin her psyche? Well, she's already kind of been removed from the home a number of times, and she's, poor thing's been bounced around all over the place anyway. Question is, what do you do when a child is that age, 16, considered a minor? In many countries, by the way, that child would be out on the street. Their parents wouldn't simply allow this anymore. But in the U.S., that child's a minor. So what do you do? Now, there are, if they don't want to go the route of a 6, 9, 1 year, very expensive, by the way, survival camp, which can stabilize things. I've seen them stabilize things. And when the child comes home, which ultimately has to happen, because they may do very well in the camp, but when they're returned back to the environment with all its temptations and all its opportunities and all of the history of clashes with adults, things can deteriorate again. So given that, I've had a number of people that I know have their 15, 16, 17, even almost 18 put in a survival camp for months. So it can. It's an option. Another option, of course, is to go through the juvenile system and press charges, unruly charges, which ultimately can lead to intervention through the juvenile court system. Anyway, too bad there's so many kids this age out of control. Just, it's a tragedy. Alrighty, thank you for joining me so very, very much. Walk with God all the way to heaven.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRRay.com and follow him on Facebook and Instagram. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.